Triathlon Show 296. Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to another episode of That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and on today's episode I interview coach Björn Andersson. Björn is a Swedish triathlon coach, and he's coaching both age groupers as well as professionals, including most notably Patrick Nilsson, who is one of the fastest long distance athletes in the world. Björn is also a former professional triathlete himself. And in this episode, we will discuss Björn's thoughts on training and coaching, some specific topics and advice on swim training, bike training and run training, and some other bits and pieces related to both age group athletes training as well as tips for professionals or aspiring professionals. Before we get into the interview, big thanks to our sponsors, Precision Hydration. Precision Hydration create electrolyte products and carbohydrate products for training and racing. If you want to optimize your performance in hot or humid conditions, avoid cramping, and make sure that your hydration is on point, then take Precision Hydration's free online sweat test to get a personalized hydration strategy. In terms of energy intake and carbohydrate intake, use their quick carb calculator to get fueling recommendations. And finally, you can book a free one-on-one consultation to refine your hydration and fueling strategy with one of Precision Hydration's experts. You have links in the episode description and show notes to all of these things mentioned. And you can get 15% off your first order of electrolytes or the Precision Fuel carbohydrate products with the promo code DETTRIATHLONSHOW15. And thank you to Roka that you can find on roka.com. Roka create exceptional quality triathlon wetsuits, tri-suits, swim skins, goggles, performance sunglasses, as well as prescription eyeglasses and sunglasses. Their products are trusted by world-leading athletes such as Lucy Charles Barclay, Javier Gomez, Flora Duffy, Morgan Pearson, Summer Rappaport, and many others in triathlon, cycling, speed skating, and many other sports. In all of these product categories mentioned, Roka's products are based on highly innovative research and development, as well as attention to every single detail, with no shortcuts taken, just an intense focus on optimizing performance, function, comfort, and design. You can get 20% off your entire Roka order with the promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. Now, without any further ado, let's get into the interview with Björn Andersson. Today's guest on the Triathlon Show is Björn Andersson from Sweden. Björn, welcome. How are you doing?
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me. I'm doing great here in Sweden.
It's good to have you. Let's start by you just giving the audience an introduction of yourself, your background, and your current work in coaching.
So I've been, I started off triathlon at a really young age in Sweden, in the early 90s actually. So I've been in the sport for a long time, and I was a professional triathlete from the early 2000s until 2011 when I stopped. I had a reasonably long career with some good races and some some bad ones, and I actually stopped because I had a lot of overtraining problems. And then I went into coaching, as a lot of other professional athletes do. And I also had been studying a little bit before I was a pro triathlete. So I had that background and enough knowledge to be able to seek out new knowledge and keep me up to date in the field of training and exercise physiology. So I've been doing that for about 10 years now, and I coach a few pros such as Patrick Nilsson and some other Swedish pros, along with some age group triathletes. So a good mix.
Yep, and I understand that you also do bike fitting.
Yes, that's another thing. That's something I was always very interested in when I was an athlete myself, and I also had an opportunity to work with some some experts in that field, such as Steve Head. That was a big interest of mine, and it was also natural to start doing that a bit more when I do bike fits with other athletes when I stopped racing myself. So I do. I would say I do a little bit more coaching than bike fits, but quite a lot of both.
Yeah. You mentioned the overtraining that you had as a professional athlete yourself. Was that something that you knew at the time that you were overtrained, or is it something that you figured out later that that was actually what was going on, and it was something that you didn't quite put your finger on at the time? What was it like?
I think mostly down to how my personality works with that stuff. I'm a reasonably rational person normally, but not when it comes to my own performances and my own training. And I was highly motivated, but I was never content or happy with anything I did. So if I did a good workout or with good numbers, I was never really happy with that. I always try to see how I could make it better, and that can be quite destructive at times. So
is that something that
I kind of knew
in coaching that you're very aware of, and aware of when to hold your athletes back in that regard?
Yes, for sure. I mean, it all depends on the athletes. Some athletes you have to hold back, and I can see some of the warning signs and like the personality type that can be destructive at some times, and others you have to push a bit more. And of course, being highly motivated and wanting to do more, that can, if you harness it the right way, it's a good thing, but it can also be too much.
Yeah. If you were to describe at a high level, give an overview of your coaching or training philosophy, what would that look like? What do you think are the most important things when it comes to training for triathlon?
I mean, it's cliche, but I think being able to have consistency in training and set up a training program that you can do, repeat over time and without breaking down and without excessive fatigue is the most important part. And then of course there are a number of things you can do with training to optimize things, but I think if I look at an age group level or kind of people starting a little bit later, I think that's kind of overriding everything else. Whereas with professionals, you have to who have been training a number of years, the details get more and more important. But it also, I don't really have a certain philosophy set in stone when it comes to what training the athletes do, because I think it depends a bit on their individual physiology and what they need. So I try to adapt and adjust depending on training data and how they respond to training.
Yeah. When it comes to achieving that consistency in training, are there any specific things there that you would advise listeners, especially on the age group side? What are the main things that they can do to manage to achieve that consistency, some specific aspects regarding their training planning?
I think just to be realistic with where their current fitness is, and also how much time they actually have to train and to recover, because I see a lot of athletes coming in with very high ambitions, which is a good thing, but they start doing too much. Maybe they do more training than they can absorb, which works for a while, but then you start to break down. So start at a realistic level and build slowly and slowly. It can be frustrating to have that to have to do that, but it always works over time, and it's better than doing too much, and then you have to take several step backs and start over again. All of a sudden, that approach has taken a lot longer than actually being patient and starting at the right level. I mean, it's very basic, but it's something that many people get wrong, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And on the professional side, when we have athletes that are very fit, they have quite a few years of training experience behind them, what do you think for professionals that maybe do not do such a good job of achieving consistency? Do you see a trend? Is there something that they seem to get wrong more often than something else? I'm thinking about, is more often that they do too much volume or too much intensity, or maybe just under appreciating the recovery needs? Do you have any thoughts around that, or is it really across the board and difficult to say which one is more common than the other?
I think it's difficult to say, but I also think it has gotten much more professional lately than it used to be when I started, because then it was everything was volume, and the more you did, the better it was. And I think a lot of people work themselves into the ground that way, and now it's more professional. You have more, so there's more science behind the training in certain ways. So I think that's a lot better. Yeah. But in some ways, it's like you say, it's the same. People do too much of one thing, and are afraid to take that step back and look at the bigger picture. But and then I also think, like, there are individual needs in training, and some people should maybe not do too much high intensity at all, while some maybe can benefit from doing more. So I think the big thing is kind of figuring that one out.
Yep. If we compare then and now a little bit, how much usually would you train, how much volume would you have in a typical week, or even if you know your yearly numbers, and if we compare that to somebody like Patrick Nilsson, how much would he train roughly in this day and age?
So when I was growing up with triathlon, I kind of had to figure everything out myself, and then I started training a little bit with people such as Gordo Byrne and Scott Molina and like the old school guys, and they did a lot of volume mostly, and obviously had a lot of great success. So my training was in some ways a bit different. I did a bit more intensity early on in the season, and then more and more specific workouts. But like my big training weeks during my specific preparation before a race, they would be typically I would do the first 3 days of the week, I would do a 5-hour ride, a 6-hour ride, a 7-hour ride, and I would do some running and some swimming with that, and then I would do a long 2.5-hour run the fourth day, and then I would do tempo and sweet spot work, 4 hours, 3 hours, 2 hours, the last 3 days of the week, with running and swimming again, so which was way more than I could handle. So if I compare that to something like Patrick would do, like during his specific training, he does like some of the same stuff, tempo and kind of sweet spot workout, longer intervals within the long rides and runs, but it's a lot more balanced and more built in recovery and such. Yeah. So it's a lot of difference, and he is also someone like his specific profile, we have worked a little bit more on his top end during the very early part of the seasons to hopefully translate that to a higher level during the specific prep, because his power profile is quite flat as it is. So.
Yeah. What are some other differences between the way that you and other professionals used to train in the early 2000s or so compared to the way that you coach now? Some things that have changed in your thinking or in the sport in general?
Like I mentioned, the intensity is one such thing. I mean, I don't... like I said, not everyone should maybe do too much intensity as a long-distance triathlete, but for some people, like that, you can have some benefits there as well, I think. And back then, that was kind of unheard of, that you did intensity at any time of the year. So I think that is kind of a big difference, that you actually do some of that instead of only... very, very high volume all the time. And another thing is power meters and stuff. Of course, power meters were around during that time as well, but you didn't have many options. So not as many people trained by it, and the knowledge and analysis of power data and stuff wasn't... at the same level as it is today. So you can do a lot more, and you know, the knowledge overall is a lot higher, I would say.
If we go into a discussion on each of the three disciplines, and if you can give a couple of pieces of advice for improving each of the three disciplines, let's start with the swim. What would be one to three key takeaways for swimming for triathletes?
Swimming is, if you start at an older age, so to speak, swimming is difficult. And again, I think at some point you just have to get the work done. And there are so many different ideas about swimming that it's hard to kind of pinpoint what's the optimal way, I think. But you absolutely have to swim quite a bit and consistently to swim well. I think if you want to optimize your swim ability, I think you need to swim, do a lot of swimming, and you can, and I don't think you should use like a pool buoy and, this neoprene swim pants too much. I think they're good sometimes because they allow you to swim more, and they allow you to swim when you're tired. But I think some people use it too much as a crutch. So that's one thing. I think you have to do some easy swimming as well. And, if you train as a swimmer, they tend to do, a lot of intensity all the time in every workout. And that's just, I think, in triathlon, a lot of swimmers do that as well, but I think it's important to do some easy swimming as well, like you do in all the other disciplines. Otherwise, it will be too much if you look at the big picture. So those things, not overcomplicating things, basically.
Yeah, I think that that point about easy swimming is interesting. It's really something I've been thinking about a lot, also from the perspective of just physiologically or metabolically. That's something that a lot of people easily don't get, that sort of low intensity stimulus. So potentially even losing out on things like being able to use a bit more fat for fuel in swimming, if they're always going at sort of relatively close to threshold. And because in swimming we have, especially adult onset swimmers, have a small range of available paces and intensities compared to a really fast pool swimmer, it ends up being you very easily get drawn into that always swimming at least sort of a tempo kind of effort, quite close to threshold. And I think that, yeah, maybe even from a physiological perspective, that is something that you really actively need to work against, and sometimes making sure that you actually are swimming really easy. And I think a tool that I found is quite useful to see if you manage that is a heart rate monitor in swimming. I think that's something that I found quite useful to see what your actual intensity is when you're swimming.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. I think a lot of people work a lot harder than they think in the pool. And I think you have to sometimes, like I said, you have to look at the big picture as well. You can't just take what you do in one discipline and apply it straight across for triathlon. Like you say, it's if you always go quite hard, that will have a metabolic impact on the training in if you look at the big picture. So I think it's important from that perspective to do some easy swimming, and I also think it's even sometimes from a technique perspective, because you kind of if you want to be a balanced swimmer, you have to be able to hold technique and your your position in the water without working really hard. That's also important for when you're racing, because if you're not have a really good swim fitness, if you go work too hard in an Ironman swim, for example, that can affect your performance a lot on the bike and the run, because it's really hard to get that heart rate down, even if even if you try to work, get it down and do a bit more ease in the beginning. So I think it's really important from a lot of perspectives.
Yeah, and over 3,800 meters of swimming, if you're swimming a bit too intensely, relatively speaking, then you can really burn through a lot of carbohydrate, and you can't refuel during the swim. You need to compensate for that on the bike. But no matter how good a job you do at compensating, if you really just swim too hard, then you're already starting on the back foot when it comes to just a substrate and fueling perspective, with being too depleted already at the start of the bike compared to where you ideally should be, considering that you still have 180 kilometers on the bike and 42 kilometers on the run to go. I think that when it comes to actually coaching and structuring sessions so that to facilitate the easy swimming, I find that giving longer intervals is helpful, because that helps people slow down a bit. So instead of, if you have for an age grouper, let's say a 2,000 meter main set of just easy endurance swimming, instead of giving 10 times 200, giving 4 times 500 would be more beneficial if you really want them to swim slow enough. Or I think that's one thing, when we split swimming into intervals, and in particular the short intervals, then it easily becomes a case of always swimming a bit harder than you maybe should be swimming.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because it's like you say, if you give an athlete an opportunity to go harder, and which you do when you give shorter intervals, then they will more likely go harder, or faster. So
the flip side of that is that over 500 meters, most athletes are more likely to maybe lose focus a bit and not think so much about technique. So that's where having frequent breaks, let's say 200s instead of 500s, can be beneficial in that sense, that you can more easily refocus. But I think that's just something that you need to train that ability to focus for a longer time and build up to that, and then just try to do that, even though it's harder to focus for a longer time like that in the pool, and you're just following the black line. But it's something to be aware of as well. As long as you're aware of the tendency that most people tend to start to lose focus over the course of longer intervals, then it's more easy to counter it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, in general with swimming, there are lots of trade-offs you have to do, and you have to adapt to depending on the athlete as well, where they are at. I mean, if you have someone who has not been swimming a lot at all, doing too long intervals, it can be detrimental as well, because they can't can't do it, so you have no choice. But then, as you say, if you have more experienced athletes, then learning how to stay focused and working on the technique even in longer intervals, it's that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Now let's move on to the bike. So what are a few key pieces of advice that you would give regarding bike training?
I think that the most commonly asked question that I get is what's the best bike workout to get me stronger on the bike? To me, there's not like really one workout that makes a difference. Again, it's not about a hero workout. It's about, what you can back up from week to week. So, when it comes to bike training, it's nothing complicated either, but I tend to write quite simple workouts that you can, remember without problem. And so just a simple structure and doing the right work at the right time. So if I, if I structure a more high intensity workout, I just do a, let's say, trainer workout, I would do a 10-minute warm-up and then some, maybe 10-15 minutes, at around 75% to 80% of threshold power around there. And then I would just do the main set, straightforward. And because it's, in my opinion, that those like simple structure makes it really easy to control progression and your training stress. And I think you have to let the body adapt to the training you give it. So I don't write a completely different training session from week to week. I usually let the athlete adapt to the work they do, and then I change something. I increase the difficulty a little bit, but the structure of the workout is similar. The intervals might get a bit longer, or they might do one more interval or something if that's the focus during that period. But so I would say it's just find a structure again that works, and do easy, simple workouts that are easy to control the training load.
Yeah. And what would you say for a typical age grouper is the balance between doing those harder workouts, whether they are, high intense intervals or kind of threshold work or sweet spot work, versus just getting in some endurance work at lower intensities?
I think it just depends on, I tend to, for most athletes I coach, I tend to do like the general training quite early on, so a bit more intensity early on in the season. Maybe some VO2max workout, and then, those intensities, you kind of max out your gains a little bit earlier. So when there's no... when they don't develop more from that, I kind of move on to some threshold-like stuff and then sweet spots and specific training. So that's kind of for a typical athlete, that's how I construct like the season and when to do what kind of workouts. But then again, there are some athletes I don't do any intensity with at all. So that I think, again, the difficult part is figuring that out, what training each athlete needs. But I think at some point it's good to switch things up, but not too often, if you understand what I mean.
Do you do some testing to determine what kind of athlete you have in front of you, whether they might need high intensity or not, or what's your view on testing, just generally speaking?
I do just like a normal power duration curve to find out a general idea of what their anaerobic work capacity and stuff, and then I also looking at the training and what they respond to. But apart from that, I don't do too much testing myself. I mean, I know there's a lot of things happening with testing, you know, the anaerobic work capacity and stuff like that, but I haven't gotten into that myself yet, but I still look at it and I try to find a, you know, I think if you follow training and you see how they perform at different thing, different intensities and levels, you get an idea of what training they respond to.
Yeah, no, I think that from my perspective, there are definitely different tests that are do a great job of profiling the athlete. But as you say, you can the power duration curve is a great way of profiling the athlete. And then at the end of the day, I think that the most important job of a good test is for you to be able to just profile the athlete and in some cases set some workout targets, perhaps. But I think that we can also get overly into the weeds with training targets in some cases, and the more important part really is to figure out who the athlete in front of you is, what is their profile like, and then you kind of can deduce based on that, okay, so what sort of training might they respond to, and then the rest comes from there. Really, that part isn't as the difficult part is that getting the right profiling done, and then the intricacies of different testing protocols can certainly have a lot of value, but I think that there are different ways of achieving the same outcome. If you see what I mean there, so that's just looking at the power duration curve definitely can give you a perfect view of what the athlete is like in terms of their physiological makeup.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, there are lots of different opinions on all that stuff, of course. And but as you say, the end goal is to figure out how to get the best out of each athlete. And for me, it's a lot about having a starting point and. Then there are so many factors, other factors as well that you know determines how an athlete responds to training, how they recover, and everything. So, you know, I like to have something to start with a test or even you know power data history. If someone has a lot of it, you can figure out a lot just by looking at that. But it's not something. That determines everything because it's a process along the way, and I change things and I you know adapt depending on how they respond during the different periods of training.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier that with Patrick, for example, you have been doing a bit more high intensity because he has a flattish power curve. So is that generally the way you do things that you? Well, and that was early in the season, I think you said. So earlier in the season, you do want to work on weaknesses, so to say, in this particular example. But if somebody is generally good at producing those high powers, then they don't really need to do that sort of training. Or is that as a rough overview a good example of how you work?
Yeah, I would say that's about how I do it, but because it's you know I figured out some people who has that not so flat power curve and probably has I don't know maybe naturally have a high anaerobic work capacity or maybe through training they tend to have need a lot of time to kind of suppress that system so I don't do a lot of intensity at all, or almost everything is below, you know, a good bit below threshold, I would say. And but if you have a professional athlete or even someone else who maybe have a more normal power curve, I think it can be good to do some intensity just because at some point, if you do too much of the same thing, you stagnate as well. So it's good to. Can be good to divide the season up into different parts. So that's one thing. And I also think in some cases, if you work at that top end and you don't do it by, you know, doing a ton of pure anaerobic training or of that sort, you can kind of transfer that by into the more specific phases sometimes as well. But either way, I mean, for someone like Patrick, where we have done, I mean, he needs to work to get his top level up a bit. Then you kind of have to do a little bit more of that high intensity stuff at some point. But at the same time, I would never have someone do that kind of training close to a race, because then you start you risk using the wrong energy systems too much during the races, which is always a bad thing. So.
Yeah. And then moving on to discuss the run, what are some tips regarding run training?
Run training, I think, even more than the others, it's even more important to focus on just consistency. Maybe for some athletes, you can get very run fit for a long distance race by just running without doing anything special or any or much speed work or harder workouts. Especially age group athletes as they get older, because it just you know, the breakdown is so, an injury risk is so much higher. So I have some athletes I train for age group that I don't do any like special work. I just build volume in a reasonable way throughout the season. And then of course the professionals, they have to do more of that. So, but I'm a bit more careful with the speed work out there for sure.
Yeah. What type of quote unquote speed work would professionals be doing? Or would you be going above threshold and do shorter intervals, or would you refer to kind of threshold intervals or something like that? That is not necessarily speed work in the traditional sense of the word, but still a lot faster than Ironman race pace or even half Ironman race pace, slightly faster than that. So what does speed work look like for the professionals?
It depends a bit when it is during the year, but for some of them, I do like just traditional like 1,000 meter repeats or 1,500 meter repeats at just below threshold, I would say. But I'm a bit more careful with that, even with them sometimes. So I would say, like the most common intervals with the pros are the long intervals, either by a standalone interval session where they kind of do, let's say 12 to 18 kilometers of interval work, somewhere between maybe standalone half marathon and marathon pace, that kind of work, and similar, a bit slower, but similar kind of workouts built within the long runs. So to me, that's and I do that with some age group athletes as well, of course, but a bit less. But I think,
yeah.
I think that can be a good way to build that kind of stamina or to last a whole marathon by increasing the speed a little bit, but without doing anything crazy.
Yeah. What's your view on run volume?
I think that's also an area where you have to be careful in the beginning. A lot of people do maybe too much too early, but of course it's important, because it builds that the toughness you need to last the whole run. But you can also get injured if you do too much too early. So I like to start at quite at a reasonable level, and then I build it slowly throughout the season. Kind of, but it's for sure important.
Yeah, right. And if we move on to racing, do you have any advice around race execution, race planning, and anything regarding racing to help people get the most out of themselves on race day?
That's also something that's very different between age group athletes and the professionals I coach. For most age group athletes, I would say that they should go easier than they think, especially in the beginning of the races. There's so many people that stress out if they lose a minute or two, you know, in the early parts of the swim or the bike. But usually that doesn't mean anything the second half of the run or, you know, during the run at all. So I think you should, you have to stay well within yourself, and you need to have a good plan before the race. And it's always better to increase the pace along the way rather than doing the opposite. So, whereas for professional athletes, you have to, since you're racing for against others, and you have to take a bit more chances, maybe sometimes, to stay with the group. I mean, you see that all the time in, for example, in Kona, where there are so many people blowing up because they take chances especially during the bike, and to stay with the athletes they need to stay with in order to win the race. So of course that means a ton of people blow up during the run and even during the bike. And in that case, you can also have a good race like Ben Hoffman had a couple of times, where he does his own race and runs his way into the podium. But if you want to win like a professional race like Kona, you have to stay with certain people, and that's a big chance you have to take. So that's very, very different, I think. And it's really the same when you look at pacing, if it's a hillier course or if it's a, you know, because obviously if you want to maximize and do the best time you can on a hillier course, you have to go a bit harder on the slow sections, the uphills. But again, if you overdo that, you will pay for it later. So for an age group athlete, maybe you have to be a bit more careful. Whereas for a professional who also has more training in their system, they can go a bit harder. So it's very different. But I think for the, you know, general age group athlete, I think it's important to be very patient and go take it easy in the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. And what about tapering for racing? How long do you like to have your athletes taper for a half or a full distance race? And is that also something that is different between age groupers and professionals?
I think it's mostly different depending on how much training they have done before the race. I mean, some age group athletes are more time constrained, and if you don't do as much work, you don't need as long of a taper. So that's different. But for an A race, I tend to taper, the pros 2 or 3 weeks a lot of the time. And the age group athletes, usually 1 to 2 weeks, depends on. But it depends. It's never completely set in stone. That either. It's a lot depending on the athlete and what kind of training they've been able to do. But and it's also another factor is that it's simply individual. Some people I found that they don't do too well if they taper too much, and they need maybe a few harder workouts even during taper time to fire on race day. So tapering is one of the more difficult aspects of it, I think.
Yeah. Some questions specifically for regarding age group athletes and how to optimize their training. First of all, as you mentioned, most age groupers have very busy lives, and it can be difficult to fit in all the swim, bike, and run training, and not to mention recovering from it and adapting to it. So do you have any advice for how to do that, whether it's time management or mindset or anything that can help with fitting things in but still being able to recover and adapt to the training?
Yeah, I think, again, being realistic with the time they have, both to do the training and recover, and then all the other commitments they have. I think it's easy to take on too much, and which works for a while, but never long term. So I think that's the most important aspect. And then training wise, it's you know, there are obviously different things you can do to optimize the training. Training time they have available, and it's also, that can be quite a difficult thing to figure out, because some athletes have very, very little time, and at some point maybe you have to focus on maximizing the training stress they can achieve during that time, even if it might not be the optimal way of training. If they had more time, if you understand what I mean. So I think that's sometimes more intensity, if you have very little time, can be a good thing, just to, you know, achieve some, you know, more training load, so to speak.
Yeah. What do you think, what would you classify as very little time? For which athletes would you load up the intensity a bit more like this, and for which athletes would you consider their training to be sort of quite normally distributed in terms of intensity? Do you have any sort of thinking around where the line goes, how many hours per week?
I think, I mean, I have a few athletes who have maybe 6 to 8 hours available, 6-7 hours most of the year, and I would consider that for training for you know, three disciplines, quiet little training time to have available. And so at that point, like, you know, I think maybe a bit more intensity can be a good thing. And if you have a bit more, like say 10 to 11, 12 hours and upwards, then that can be kind of in between a little bit, but if you have that much time, it's you have some more you know, more to play with, so to speak, and more to adjust. So so I think if you're training for an Ironman, if you have 6, 7, 8 hours, that's that will never be enough to kind of reach your full potential or anything like that. But it's possible to do an Ironman of that and do well, especially if you maybe focus on maximizing your training stress during that time. And then if you can set aside, you know, a few weeks closer to the race where you try to get in the longer workouts that you need to do an Ironman, then you can achieve some good results that way too. I mean, it's not 100% optimal, but it's possible to do quite well that way as well.
Yep. And are there any special considerations for age groupers that do have a lot of time, let's say 15 plus hours per week, and they are very motivated and have quite ambitious goals? But are there any special things that you would advise them?
I would advise them to you know, start at the right training level and or their fitness level. I think usually when I come across an athlete like that, as you say, they're highly motivated and they want to make use of the time they have and train as much as possible. But sometimes, you know, they haven't reached that fitness level. They haven't, they don't have the training background to start training that much immediately, which means that they probably do a lot of the training without absorbing all of it. And which is, you know, it's a bit of a waste of time, but it also, after a while, it will just you know, break them down, because they can't recover from everything either. So even if it's frustrating to start at a lower level, I would advise most of them to do a little bit less in the beginning and build slowly and use the extra time recovery, and because that will probably make a bigger difference.
Yeah, I had a very interesting discussion with another Björn, German coach Björn Kafka, and he talked about how it's possible to quantify how much training you can absorb based on an individual's VO2 max. And that was a really interesting discussion, but it is exactly what you're saying, depending on your fitness level, you can absorb a different amount of training. And anecdotally and qualitatively, I think anybody who has been training for a long time realizes that you can do more training now if you're fitter than you did when you started. And but you're right. I think a lot of people that have a lot of time available to train, they maybe shouldn't use all of that time because they might not be at that level yet where they have the fitness to actually absorb all the training. And this is again where triathlon is very different to a single discipline sport, because I don't think that you have that problem too much in, especially not in running, because it's limited more biomechanically and in terms of injury prevention than anything else. But also in swimming and cycling, unless you're training at a very high volume, you're more, as an amateur anyway, more unlikely to overdo things. But when you have those three different disciplines to combine, it easily ends up being that you overshoot what your fitness is actually capable of taking on at the moment.
Yeah, I agree completely with that, because it's that's one of the great things about triathlon, is that you have the variety of the three disciplines, but it also means you're never quite happy with the training you do, because there's always, you know, there are so many things you can do, so it's easy to overdo things. But it's interesting what you say about VO2 max and finding out how much of training an athlete can absorb, because what I do is, it's mostly guesswork, just based on what they've done before and how they start performing in training and develop from training. But if you can take the guesswork out, it makes things a lot easier, of course.
Yeah, it's early days for me, but I've had a couple of really interesting examples of athletes where I have kind of quantified that training load and made adjustments based on this quantification, and they've actually already started to see some quick improvements based on that. So I'm cautiously optimistic I'm never going to say that it's the be all end all or anything, but it can be a useful tool certainly to have in the toolbox when it comes to training planning.
Yeah, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. Then I have a couple of questions around professionals and professional racing. So first of all, what do you think these days it takes to become a reasonable level professional triathlete in terms of their commitment to training and to the sport in general and their lifestyle as a professional athlete?
You have to be very complete as a triathlete now. For a professional, you can't really have any weaknesses. Of course, you can afford to lose maybe a little bit of time swimming or in any other disciplines, but the racing is so even now. You have so many good swimmers, and so I think that you need to have to be at a good level in all three sports, and you have to assess your where your strengths and weaknesses are, and work on them until you get to that point. In order to have successful career as a professional or do well in the races. And that's something that's changed quite a bit from when I was racing, because during that time and even during the 90s, of course, the athletes had a very good level, but it was more a bit uneven between athletes. Someone could still win a race while not being the absolute best swimmer. It was more spread out, so to speak. And then things started changing because more people started swimming faster. So you would get a bigger group out of the water, and all of a sudden you don't have as much chance catching up anymore. And this, because the bike is also faster when you have more people around them, and which also means that some people save a bit more energy and run faster. So So these days, yeah, you have to be a really good swimmer, and you have to, yeah, you can't lose too much time in any of the disciplines anymore. So I think that's something, you know, you really have to look at if you're aspiring to be a good professional triathlete.
Yeah, we talked about how the volume of training and the intensity of training might have changed a bit. One thing that I'm wondering is, do you think there is a difference now in that most professional athletes have coaches, whereas when you started out, maybe more of the athletes were self-coached and putting things together themselves? Is that something that you've seen?
Yes, I think, people had coaches back then too, but I think it was more common to be self-coached even still. And nowadays it's just, yeah, like I mentioned before, I think it's more professional. We know a bit more and just through science, but also, of course, you know, the athletes that started racing, hard in the 80s and 90s, they kind of figured everything out by themselves, and a lot of the things they learned is, of course, you can apply today too. But now we know so much more, both from both the professional and scientific way, and through experience, that I think it's very different that way. So people have more coaches, but I think also the coaching is in general more professional. Is maybe not the right word, but it's more everything is more structured, I think. And I think in general, there are so many things that have just evolved. If you look at, for example, bike positioning, and people didn't really pay attention to equipment and that stuff too much before, but now, you know, everyone, or mostly everyone, have a good aerodynamic position on the bike. They, you know, they think about equipment, tires, suits, helmets, everything. So everything is kind of faster and more streamlined. And there were bigger differences before. These days you can't get a 15-minute lead off the bike in a big race anymore, because everyone has optimized most things a lot more.
Yeah. What advice would you give to athletes that are considering taking a step to start racing professionally?
You have to be really, you really have to like the lifestyle. My career wasn't the most successful one, but I still enjoyed it a lot, the whole process and everything. And, except for a few very high profile athletes, you will probably not make a lot of money if you try to, you know, be a professional athlete in the true sense of the word and living off of the sport. So, and it can also be quite negative to be out of the, you know, normal work life for that many years. So I think you have to be aware of that first of all. And then, of course, you have to be realistic about your capabilities and where you are and where you can get, and make a plan. How to, you know, improve and get through a level that you need to get to. And, you can always break down what is needed to do well at an event. So I think that's very important to do as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's finish up with some rapid fire questions. So take just one sentence to answer each of these. And the first one is, what's your favorite book, blog, or resource related to endurance sports?
As far as book, I think Scientific Training for Triathletes by Phil Skiba is, that would be it.
Yeah, past guest of the show, Phil Skiba. I can't remember the episode number, but listeners, you can just put Phil Skiba in the search bar on scientifictriathlon.com and find that episode. Next, what's your favorite piece of gear or equipment?
Uh, for a training tool power meter.
And what's a personal habit that's helped you achieve success?
I would say being very stubborn, but that also was my downfall. So
yeah,
so it can be good, both good and bad.
Yeah. All right. And finally, Björn, tell the listeners, where can they find you? We have a lot of Swedish listeners, actually. So tell us about your website, social media, and so on.
My website is bjornandersson.se. So yeah, if you type that in or just Google search my name, it will come up. I'm not super active on social media, actually, but I have an Instagram account, BA Coaching. So you can follow that as well for very sporadic updates.
Right, great. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and have a chat. It was great. I enjoyed it, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed that interview. As always, you can find the show notes on scientifictriathlon.com, where you will have links to Björn's website and Instagram, as well as a couple of episodes mentioned here. The interview that I did with Phil Skiba in episode 173. I actually looked up the book by Phil Skiba that Björn recommended as his resource, and currently some joker is selling it on Amazon for $600, so maybe a bit much. But I think, based on some forum posts, that Phil Skiba is about to release a new edition of his book in the coming months or so. So I will actually try to get him on again and discuss that when that happens. And hopefully at that point, there will be more availability of the new edition of his book, and at more reasonable prices. Again, the fact that you can now find his old book for $600 is probably just some individual selling his old copy, rather than having anything to do with Phil Skiba or the publisher of the book, the old edition. It's just out of print, I would assume. The other episode that I will link to is the one that I did with Björn Kafka. We discussed here in this episode how potentially VO2 max can relate to sustainable training volume, and that's something we discussed at length with Björn Kafka in episode 286. So that can be interesting if you want to hear more. Next week, I interview Phil Bellinger on the muscle fiber typology and how that relates to training. So how whether you're more fast twitch or slow twitch dominant can relate to your training characteristics, how you adapt to training, and so on and so forth. A really interesting interview, and we will also discuss some new methods for assessing muscle fiber typology. If you want to take your training, racing, and endurance performance to a new level, then check out our coaching services and training plans on scientifictriathlon.com. We would be glad to help you out and help you achieve your triathlon goals. Big thank you, finally, to our sponsors, Precision Hydration, that you can find on precisionhydration.com. Take their free online sweat test to get a personalized hydration strategy, or use the quick carb calculator to get a fueling strategy. You can get 15% off your first order of electrolytes or precision fuel products with the promo code DETTRIATHLONSHOW15. And thank you to Roka, that you can find on roka.com. Check out their wetsuits, trisuits, swimskins, goggles, high-performance eyewear, and prescription glasses and sunglasses, and get 20% off your order with a promo code that you can get on roka.com/TTS. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart, and keep loving triathlon.